The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley. On a beautiful day in the Delaware Valley, I'm proud to announce a debut broadcast. This is going to be an awesome show. I'm ecstatic to announce the Taking Charge with Paula Robinson show. And without further ado, let me introduce you to Paula Robinson. How are you, Paula?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Paula is the founder of Robinson Law. This show is we're going to talk all types of legal topics. Work injuries primarily, but we've got some phenomenal guests, and you know it's just going to be you know a great show. Paula, before we introduce our guest, who's no stranger to radio broadcast around the Delaware Valley, and he and I have had a recent broadcast we did. We had pizza, cheesesteaks, everything. Mm-hmm. On, you know, Joe Krause. We could never tell him that, but while you know Joe was on hiatus. We had a blast. We did it on location. Having said that, what kind of goals do you have with the show?
Well, I'd like to just make people aware of who I am and what I do and have guests on that can educate the public, just have some interesting topics, have other lawyers on, have other entrepreneurs from different businesses, and just have some fun.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about. And speaking of having some fun, without further ado, let's bring in our guest, your first guest.
That's right.
Which, by the way, the pool was huge, but there was only one individual, Enrique Rosario of the Law Offices of Enrique Rosario. How are you, sir? Welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Paula, for inviting me to be your first guest on your Taking Charge with Paula Robinson show. I was just looking on Facebook. They had a thing about the Jack Benny show. So this is like, you know, the new Jack Benny show, except it's not going to be comedy. It's going to be serious stuff, talking about workers' compensation law and the other areas of law, my specialty, immigration, and I'm sure many other interesting topics. So it's a pleasure to be here.
And what's interesting also is you both own your own firm, Hispanic-owned firm, which, you know, and you've been doing this a long time and successfully. And of course, Paul, a woman-owned firm, and you know, it's in a sense, and you kind of, you know, you're pioneers. Not in the fact that there's no other firms out there like it, but the fact is, not everybody, no matter who you are, is confident enough to give it a shot on their own. I had one attorney, and he said to me, he left a really big firm, and I know and when he got to the door of his new place, before he even opened up, he had a panic attack. Did a U-turn, about face, and decided that it was some kind of like divine intervention, because another firm called him literally within the hour and said, would you like to cut? And he did it. So the point is, it's not an easy thing to do. Both of you have been doing it extremely successful. Paula, how long have you had the firm? Remind our listeners.
It's going on 11 years.
11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And your specialty, so as we kind of remind the Delaware Valley, because you're becoming a heck of a veteran here on the station, your specialty is what?
I represent injured workers in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
And those injured workers, you know, individuals who get injured on the job, those laws and those rules and regulations are special. It's enough of a specialty that the Supreme Court in the state of Pennsylvania actually certifies, has a certification for workers' compensation specialists. So it's not something that general practice attorneys or anybody who gets injured on the job and has a brother-in-law or sister-in-law that does a little law, a little general practice, or maybe, you know, maybe their landlord-tenant, you don't want to go, you know, it's like a doctor. You don't want to go to a knee specialist if you have, if you're having a, you know, heart issue.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, why is that?
Well, I think they came out with the certification, I want to say maybe 10, 12 years ago. I think it was to keep out the attorneys who really didn't do workers' comp solely. Because it is very specialized, it's governed by the Workers' Comp Act, which falls under the Department of Labor and Industry, and it's a very specific administrative law. And unless you practice it and practice it a lot, you don't know the judges, you don't know the rules, you don't know the procedures, and you can really get someone in trouble if you don't know what you're doing. They can lose their benefits. They can lose medical benefits. So it's something to be taken very seriously. And I think that's why they came out with the certification, for which, as you know, we had to take that test for.
I heard it's a very difficult test.
It was. It was very esoteric. And even people who've been practicing as long as I have, I'm now going on 35 years. It was a bizarre test.
Really? But did you take it once?
Yes.
Ooh, thank God for that one.
That's right.
Enrique, yeah. If you would remind our listeners what you do.
Okay, Joe, thank you. I've been doing immigration and nationality law for about 30 years as well.
Both of you must have started when you were 6 years old. Let's be real. but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I that's the part I hate to talk about all the time. You know, so how many years you've been doing this?
You know, it's fun. Before you go, let me say this. You know, you say that, but I'll tell you the truth. From doing, you know, a lot of shows, I don't care what the situation. And by the way, I mean, I'm sure there's some good young lawyers out there, but having the confidence to retain somebody when it's your, you know, potentially one situation. I mean, I don't care how good the young attorney is, 28 years old, is not going to fly with me. I don't get me wrong. It's a lot of good attorneys, some great schools, doing some good stuff. So I'm not trying to put, you know, but I'm saying for me personally, I want an experienced attorney. You know what I mean? I don't want somebody, you know, saying, well, I just, you know, I've been doing it 3 years. Because you boss around, because I'm not going in that direction. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. You know, last time we were together, I was with Paula doing another show, and we met for the first time. Right. And she said to me, well, you know, what does an immigration lawyer do, you know? And because a lot of people, she's an attorney for 30 years, and she's asking me the question, right? So people don't realize that there's so much involved with this. There are people who have relatives in other countries. They want to bring them here. We do petitions on their behalf at the embassies and consulates around the world. The people who are here as green card holders, permanent residents, they want to become citizens. We do their naturalization process. There's people who get detained for being out of status, and they're placed in deportation, removal proceedings, as we call it, and we represent them in removal proceedings. So there's a variety of different things that we're involved in. There's companies that want to bring workers from other countries, and so there's all kinds of visas, H-1B, L visa, intercompany transferees. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. Political asylum, as we've seen in the news. If you watch the news a little bit, you see that there's an issue on the border of the people crossing the border and immediately claiming, you know, I'm going to be killed if I have to be returned to my country. Let me stay, you know, refugees, asylees. So there's a lot involved, and it is very specialized, and it takes a lot of experience. And, you know, we have it. So
the synergy in a lot of ways that in that area, because you handle a lot of work visas, a lot of people want to come over to go to work. And in your area, Paula, that's what you do, dealing with individuals who get injured at work. Enrique, the majority of clients that you deal with, are they work-related type situations that are seeking to come over? Or are they a decent amount? Or is it just one?
No. Again, it becomes very specialized. So, you know, when you have employment-based immigration, that's a category of immigration, very specialized. Usually the people that hire those folks, it's the employer. So it would be the big companies. It would be the landscaping companies for the seasonal workers, or you know, technical companies for computer folks or whatever. So that's more high end immigration. You know, so there's some big firms in Philadelphia that handle that, that are retained by, you know, the big corporations. Right, right. That's not what we do. I'm dealing with folks, you know, Emma Lazarus. You know, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched masses coming to these teeming shores. You know,
sure.
So we deal with these folks. And but you say, well, what does it have to do with work? Well, guess what they come here to do, other than have families and live here? To work. Everybody comes to work. Contrary to popular, misconceptions, most everybody, pretty much, that comes to this country wants to make a better life, and they want to work. Yeah. However they came, they wind up working. And many of them are exploited. Many of them are in situations where they're very vulnerable, and they don't have the protections of the law that they maybe should. And in this country, we afford everyone. This is what people don't realize. Whether you're a citizen, permanent resident, you're here on a visa, we all have the same inalienable rights guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States of America. We can't just beat you up and throw you in jail and give you no rights just because you're not a citizen. It doesn't work like that. Everybody has the rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you're not legally here, then there's a process by which you may be removed. However, you still have a right to an attorney. You still have a right to, you know, every other thing that everybody else has, to due process and all the rights that we afford to every human being in this great country of ours. You know, and so, you know, I'm proud to represent a lot of the folks I represent. Say, well, they came here illegally. Oh, they're all criminals. I can tell many stories.
Well, God,
but
God
there's
knows
a lot
how
of good people.
My ancestors came. You know,
sure.
Another. But interesting enough, it's hard enough, Paul, when it comes to a work injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For somebody who's 50 years old, was born in South Philly,
yeah,
to navigate that system on their own. Okay, let alone somebody. Even if they're here legally, but if there's a language barrier or a cultural barrier, okay, and that, and the cultural, part of it, trying to navigate it, on your, like I said, if you're born and bred in South Philly, is hard enough. Why is it so difficult? You would think that in this world of somebody working so hard for maybe for the same company, maybe it's a union guy,
mm-hmm,
okay, that we always say in my trade, there's old iron workers and bald iron workers, but there's no old bald iron workers. What's that mean? Well, you know, you take too many chances or you do too many stupid things, you're going to get beat up if you're lucky. The other alternative is you could get yourself, you know, killed, for crying out loud, because it's a dangerous, we build the high-rise buildings. Not every job is a high-rise building, but either way, every job is a difficult one. And so injuries happen. You're working for that company for 20 years, even, let's go with an extreme situation, 20, 25 years, you get injured one time, and you would think it would be the easiest thing in the world to navigate. You find you give somebody, and I always use this example, get injured on a Friday, try to give the contractor the weekend, because it's not a catastrophic injury. It's a shoulder or back injury. You want to hope it's going to get better over the weekend. And next thing you know, Monday comes and it's worse.
Mm-hmm.
Go in, I got injured on Friday. I didn't really want to make waves. Here I am Monday. I was hoping it would get better, but it didn't. I need to go talk to somebody, okay? They don't give you a trophy. There's no award ceremony talking about the most dedicated worker. You often, they use some of those things as a loophole. Why? Why is the system set up so that in a lot of ways, if somebody tries to navigate on their own, their life could be literally turned upside down?
Oh, yeah, that happens so often that people, that they don't want to make waves and they think, oh, I'll just put ice on it or, self-medicate. And when they realize they do have a problem and they go to the employer, it becomes a problem then for the employer, and it boils down to money. And this person's not going to be able to work, not going to be able to produce. I'm going to have to turn this into my workers' comp carrier. My premiums are going to go up. That's the first thing they think of.
Yeah.
Not, oh, how can I help you?
Yeah.
Can I get you to one of our panel doctors which all employers in Pennsylvania are required to have, a list of panel doctors. And I would say over 90% of the employers don't.
I mean, see, but who would know? Who would know what the requirements are when somebody suffers a work injury?
Right.
And the next thing you know, they're up the creek without a paddle, and it could be a long road. Enrique,
yeah. What occurs to me as I listen to you both, you know, is that it's pretty clear if somebody doesn't report the injury at the time it happens,
yeah, notice.
Then the defense of the company is naturally going to be causation. It didn't happen here. You did that over the weekend. It wasn't at work. You didn't report it at the time it happened.
Right.
So maybe the first piece of advice we want to give people is something, you feel a twinge, something hurts, something's a problem, make a report right now. Don't wait, right? I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
well, legally they have 120 days to give notice, but the further out you go, and Ricky's right, it becomes a problem, and that's enough for a workers' comp adjuster to latch on to issue a denial. And once they issue that denial, then the only alternative for the claimant is to file a claim petition and go before a workers' comp judge. And that litigation can last 9 months to a year. And you have people who have no money coming in, they're hurt, and they don't have any alternative insurance. It's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it is a problem. And Enrique, you know, in immigration law, individuals that are coming over from other countries, you're often their most trusted individual. They're not coming through a corporation when they come to you. By the way, we go back a couple years now, and you were highly recommended by a friend of mine, you know, to bring on the show. Okay, and so the community that you represent, they have a lot of trust in you when it comes to work injury types of situations. At what point do you usually get them? Like I said, because in South, you know, in a citizen that was born and raised here doesn't understand these laws, that get themselves in a pickle because they're trying to be a nice guy or a nice girl. What you get injured workers coming and knocking on your door? What's usually the situation?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, we get all kinds of stuff. You can imagine. So there are people who have had a surgery and it didn't go well, and they're complaining, but they don't know what to do, and they come into my office and say, "Well, we're here for immigration, and we're not here for the other." I said, "But you look in pain. There's something wrong. Oh, I got hurt at work. Oh, the doctor did something to me. I slipped and fell. You can't imagine the number of different things that we find out just speaking to the people, because we're like a portal. They come into us, trusting us about whatever their problems are, and then we refer them. And that's one of the main sources of our business now, is just to refer folks to the proper help, because people don't know. There is a workers' comp system, and you are guaranteed compensation for your salary and, you know, for your permanent loss of a use of body part or all these things. People don't know this. I mean, the average person, what do they know about this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, they don't have a clue. And this is why the education is so important. That's why shows like this, it's a public service. It's not just an advertising for us to say our names and give our telephone number. It's really a public service to educate the community about all these intricate systems of law that we have in this country that people aren't even remotely aware of.
It's interesting also because some individuals are coming over from, countries like Russia or China, where they don't have, there's no workers' comp. The legal system over there, God knows what it is.
Yeah.
So they don't only know about, workers' compensation or, immigration law. I mean, obviously they'll learn about immigration law if they want to come over here legally. But the point is, it's a completely...
I have people here, legal visas. They don't even know what the conditions of the visa are. No, you'd be amazed at the ignorance.
Yeah.
incredible.
Go ahead.
I just took a phone call before I came in here from a young man, not Hispanic, but he called in a panic and he said, "I need a lawyer." And I was asking him what the situation was. He's been on workers' comp 2 years. He hasn't retained a lawyer. From asking him the appropriate questions, he has a hearing this afternoon.
Ugh.
So I had to tell him what to say when he goes before the judge. And we're having our hearings virtually. And if you can't attend virtually, there's a phone number you can call in. So I had him send me a screenshot of his hearing notice, and I said, look in the right, look on the left, here's what you need to do, and then, you know, I'll call you when I'm done.
What's interesting, the fact that he's actually been on workers' comp for 2 years and hasn't needed a lawyer is a miracle in itself.
Well, he probably has needed a lawyer, he just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
and when I explained to him that they hired a lawyer, he went to an independent medical evaluation. That doctor said he was fully recovered because he said, this says super, I said, that's supersedious. And he said something about a physician's affidavit. I said, well, that doctor, you went to this exam, right? Yeah. That doctor says you're fully recovered, and now they filed a termination petition. I said, you see that on the paper? Termination? They're trying to stop not only your medical, but your wage loss benefits.
It's time to secure.
Oh, my God,
It's time to secure a legal professional, obviously, like yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it amazes me. We have these conversations.
We're not making this up. We couldn't make this up.
No, I mean, but also one of the reasons why I think the circumstances that whoever that individual is got injured. I don't know him or her, but I would say this. Imagine. It could have been a third party case. He could have walked into a hole dug by somebody else.
Exactly.
If you don't get legal help, and it could be a Social Security disability situation.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff.
But nobody wants to make waves. But the insurance company lawyers, they go into protocol instantaneously.
Oh yeah.
And so that individual who is you're not allowed to sue your employer, right?
Well, workers' comp is the exclusive remedy. There are some exclusions, but it is the exclusive remedy.
And that came back, you know, that came about because of what, the grand bargain, I think it was called, where you gave up the right to sue your attorney for workers' compensation
your
insurance.
Your employer.
Right, Oh, yeah, I apologize. Your employer.
Yeah, but watch it. Watch it with two of the attorneys.
I'm
your attorney. I'm
Freudian slip. Freudian slip.
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did. No.
Have some more coffee there.
No, you're not allowed to sue your employer in lieu of workers' comp insurance, right? So is that basically
that's correct. Now, if you were injured, like, on a device, or there's a product liability case, or you were in a motor vehicle accident where you were driving a work vehicle and you were injured in a motor vehicle accident, then there's third party cases against other people.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yes.
But if it's a regular workers' compensation case, a work injury where you hurt yourself picking up a heavy beam or something, then it's a workers' compensation case. If you were injured in work at because of the negligence of somebody else, you know, it could be a third party case. And I'm saying this so somebody might know who's listening.
Right.
That means that there may be not only a work comp case, but also a third party case against another entity.
Yeah. Well, I'll just give you another example. I represented a gentleman. He had some bad luck, but I represented him on a work injury. He was a respiratory therapist. He was in the course of his employment, and somebody clearly hit him and caused an accident. So he retained me right away for the workers' comp, and then he had a third-party case, obviously, against the individual who hit him.
So, not the lawyer? I'm joking. I'm just kidding.
I referred him. I gave him some attorney's names for the third-party case. And that insurance company just tendered their policy limits of $250,000. And he was,
what does that mean?
Needless to say, very happy.
They paid.
Oh, they paid.
They paid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was no defense. It was an older gentleman and he caused the accident and they didn't want to go through litigation and they just tendered the policy limits.
So the older gentleman worked for the city and he hit the other?
No. My client was
the older gentleman?
Struck by the older gentleman.
Oh, okay.
And the older gentleman's insurance, his automobile insurance, he had policy limits of $250,000.
Okay.
So they just said, take it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very, very important when you suffer a work injury
to at least
talk to a lawyer, even if you don't want to retain one right away, which I always say you should, but...
I don't want to get biblical, but in the beginning.
That's right.
In the beginning. That's not right. Wait till he said, it's time to get a lawyer. No, 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 not at the end. Not at stage four cancer. You want to get it up front, right?
Right. Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of what I was leading up to, and the fact that somebody doesn't, you know, you get in touch with somebody, you get a lawyer 2 years in. There may have been so many things that were missed in regards to third party and a lot of those other situations. You may think that you were fortunate, you know, that you were paid, and you are. I mean, you are fortunate if you got paid for 2 years and you didn't, and they didn't, you know, try to knock you off. But the fact of the matter is that getting that legal education and having that representative right there,
absolutely.
It's priceless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just quickly switching to the immigration stuff, you know, it's federal. It's not state. This is a state thing. We're federal. Right. And so, you know, if something happens at the federal level, the president announces something, or Congress actually does something, which isn't, you know, they never do anything. But if they ever do anything, you know, if that ever happens, then people are not aware of it. So I've had people walk in and say, yeah, I heard about this thing. I want to apply for this. I'm like, the time is up. You didn't hear about this? This has been going on for 18 months, 2 years. You missed the deadline. Oh, I just heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the lack of knowledge. And it's really hard to get the word out to people about things. And people really, you know, it's hard for me to say to people, well, you should pay attention to the Code of Federal Regulations and pay attention to the congressional hearings on C-SPAN. You know, it's not happening.
It's very interesting you say that because, you know, in workers' comp and I know in immigration law, but we're very, very fortunate, you know, that there's a trial lawyers association that deals with legislation.
Yes.
Okay, because while we're and our families are here or at home or working or raising their families and doing those things, your organizations are watching for legislation that would absolutely take any safety net out of anybody. So So I get a kick out of workers' compensation with the legislators, the right-wing legislators. You can have work compensation, but you can't have any medical. We want power of the entire medical, which means, and I'm being sarcastic, but not really, we're going to, we want control of it. Our doctors are going to say that unless you're catastrophically injured, that we're going to deny your claim.
Absolutely.
And so my point is, and I say that because a legislator with the, you know, stroke of a pen can sit there and say, well, we want to, like in New Jersey, okay? In New Jersey, how the medical is all controlled by, always controlled by, you know, the other side, you know, the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does that work? You walk in, you're injured, and they look at you and say you're not.
You're fine.
You're fine. Now, mm-hmm. And there's
go
no
back
other,
to work.
You can't go to another doctor for a second opinion. I mean, I'm not breaking that apart. I'm simply saying that thank God that in our worlds with our attorneys, with our work comp and with our immigration attorneys and a lot of other areas, our legal professionals are very active when it comes to legislative. You know, while the rest of us are sitting at home, there's a law out there that's on, you know, that's being proposed, piece of legislation that would, I'll bet you there's dozens and dozens in each different state, like you said, it's state, that would destroy work injury benefits if it could.
Yeah.
If the Trial Lawyers Association wasn't on top of things.
That's
right. How big a part of that is what you guys do? In other words, staying on top of that stuff.
Well, I mean, we rely on them, and you know, it's important to stay on top of what's going on and, you know, contribute to them.
And understand the political process.
Well, I mean, we're members of associations. I'm a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. I'm a member of the Philadelphia Bar Association. I'm a member of the Pennsylvania. I mean, right. So we get, you know, the legal intelligencer. We get the news. We watch to see what's happening. So when I speak on these shows, I can say, hey, recently the Pennsylvania legislature did X, Y, and Z. Or recently Congress did that. Or recently the Attorney General gave a grant for a designated.
And by the way, you're so up on that that whenever we do a show. But
I come
Let me tell you.
It's our job to educate.
Right. But let me tell you who at least used to not be on top of it. A lot of the medical professionals. So they were getting hit. They couldn't even get in to see some of them. And they're really good doctors and a lot of great professionals, but not politically engaged. Now, there are some organizations, Physicians for Patients' Rights and all that, are involved, but that's just recent. So when they wanted to get in to see their state reps aren't even looking. I'm like, you know, coming from labor.
Yeah, wait. The American Medical Association is a big lobby group, okay?
They may be, but the local injury doctors here.
That's different. Right.
On a local situation, you know, they called me, this is over a decade ago. Can you come and consult with us? They had some kind of situation that was being voted on in Harrisburg. And I said, well, can't you get in? I mean, who'd you talk to? Nobody. My point is, I know they've done better, but it was a difficult situation, and they had to learn the hard way. I say that also because voting, okay, in the labor movement, mm-hmm. knowing who impacts your livelihood or your profession is it, just like in your area, Enrique and Paula. Certainly, it's you know, being politically active and understand goes hand in hand with what everybody does. Labor on my side of the table, immigration, workers' compensation, we're really aligned when it comes to a lot of the work laws. And a lot of that, you know, came about as I started to do these broadcasts. When we come back, we're going to talk, we're going to delve into the immigration, you know, arena pretty in depth. This is the fastest hour in radio. We're already halfway through Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. The debut broadcast. We'll have more after the break.
What is hope? Hope to me was just that he would get to come home. I had no idea how hard it would be once he got back.
I wish she'd stop drinking so much. She thinks it's helping, but it's not. I hope she sees that soon.
I act like I don't care if he comes to my games. But I hope he does.
I used to hope he'd find happiness again. Now I hope our marriage makes it.
I hope Grandpa will get help. He thinks it's too late, but it's not.
With everything that he's going through, I hope he sees a counselor. I just want my brother back.
I hoped he'd get help. Stop hoping things would get better on their own. He told me to stop asking. I didn't. Then one day he asked for a ride.
Hope is knowing there are other families just like yours, that the veterans they love got help and recovered. Go to maketheconnection.net and turn hope into action.
Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. Can always find people who are helping. Thank you to all the first responders who put their lives in danger to help us when my brothers and sisters and mom and dad and grandpa and grandma need them.
Thank you, first responders.
This is what I signed up for as a first responder. I am constantly worried about being exposed to this virus and potentially bringing it back to my home and my family. I'm going to continue going to work day in and day out and providing help to those that need it.
We look out for the helpers because they look out for us.
Thank you, first responders.
Be safe, look after yourself, and look after one another. Thanks.
Let's show up for first responders and their families. Go to firstrcf.org to find out how you can help today.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water, appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature, the feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect fresh water, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our fresh water. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to our debut show, Taking Charge with Paula Robinson, Robinson Law. Paula Robinson is the founder of Robinson Law. We're ecstatic to have our first guest, Enrique Rosario, Law Offices of Enrique Rosario, a fantastic immigration attorney throughout the Delaware Valley and beyond. And one of the things that you wanted to mention, Paula, was that you've made a major commitment to serve in the Hispanic community, particularly up in the Lehigh Valley area. Talk about that.
Okay. Well, I have several offices, but my main office is in Center Valley. It's up going towards Allentown. And I'm always thinking about ways to evolve my business to help people. And so I decided, because there are so many warehouses and Hispanic people in the Bethlehem, Easton, Allentown area, that they need represented too. And a lot of them are on the front line, blue-collar workers. They're the ones that are getting injured, and they need help badly. So what I've done is I actually recently switched marketing companies, and I have a Spanish plugin on my website that converts my entire website from English into Spanish, and I have a designated phone number for them. It indicates we speak Spanish, obviously in Spanish. And then I have a bilingual answering service, and they have access to my calendar, and I wrote the script that I would like them to ask the people who call in, and then they will schedule the appointment in one of my offices. And then I also hired an interpretation service, and they will be with me during my meeting with the client to interpret. And they can either do that by coming into my office with me, with the client, or they can do it by Zoom.
By Zoom.
Yeah.
And certainly, you mentioned that there's a need for it in the community, a lot of frontline workers. And Enrique, this is your community. Talk about the importance of the trust factor and the relationships. And doing business, with any ethnic group who wants to understand and feel good about who they're dealing with, and have a a language barrier is one of the biggest issues with any situation. If somebody can't understand what's going on, they're not going to feel comfortable retaining somebody.
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, there's a lot of charlatans in the community who, just because they happen to speak the language, all of a sudden they're attorneys when they're really just notaries. All of a sudden they know about workers' comp when they have no clue. All of a sudden they're doing these divorces that they don't know how to do the paperwork properly, and they get into all this trouble with people with the unauthorized practice of law, folks that are not only attorneys, but, sometimes even when they are attorneys, they still get it dabbling in areas that they're not expert in. So it's really a pleasure and a privilege to have met Paula and to realize that there's somebody with 30 years of experience who's willing to reach out to the Hispanic community and to, help people to bridge that gap in terms of the information that they're not receiving on the street, from the notary, in the neighborhood, from other lawyers who are dabbling in areas that they're not expert. It's really a bridge that we can build so that the folks can come in and see me and they say, hey, I think I have a problem. It may not be, like you kept saying, a specific injury at work. Maybe it's years of doing a particular thing, and now they have something, a joint that's worn down, or, they have carpal tunnel, or, certain things that happen, these conditions, these medical conditions that arise out of years of, repetitive, overuse injuries. So there's so many things. And when I hear the people, then I can say, wait a minute, you're, in a certain area. She's willing to come to Bucks County. She's willing to come to Montgomery County. She's willing to come to Chester County, Delaware County, all these counties. Oh, my goodness. We have somebody who's really experienced, who has the capacity to speak your language, has the experience, will help you, will refer you to other lawyers who are also very good. It's like a network. It's like a spider web. Yeah. And once you fall into the right net, you're taken care of.
Well, Paul, that's got to be, it's got to be great to have, an endorsement and an introduction and from somebody like Enrique, who is obviously his credibility in the community and the success. This, by the way, we talk about, both of you sitting there talking about 30, 35 years. Well, that's where both of that comes in. Legal expertise and credibility in your fields. I mean, that's got to be just something you can only, in a lot of ways, when you're trying to make a commitment to a community and you're obviously an outstanding attorney and sincere in what you're trying to do. But, people want to you know, go, you know, where everybody knows your name, right?
And, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
And but let me tell you, it doesn't matter if it's workers' comp, it doesn't matter if it's immigration or criminal defense or whatever it is. When you walk in that courthouse, you walk into that hearing or room or whatever, and the judge knows you,
yes,
and the assistant knows you, and everybody knows you. And then, you know, it's like, you know, I go to immigration building. Enrique, how you doing? And the client says, wow, that's my guy.
That's right.
I'm with him.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got my back, you know, and it means so much, you know. And in Philadelphia, you know, the names of the criminal defense, Jack McMahon, you have, you know, whoever was it, the big criminal defense attorneys, you know, Lou Savino, you know, and then people, oh, yeah, I got the right guy because he knows everybody and everybody knows him. And if I'm going to get a fair shake, I'm going to get it with him. And that's the kind of thing you're buying or, you know, that you're buying into as a professional service when you have somebody like this with 30 years of experience who's well-known.
Yeah, well,
in the
and when you're talking about the Hispanic community and the roots and the relationships, really like in any situation, whether it's an ethnic situation or a neighborhood situation. So you have an attorney in South Philly, and it's one of the things that I've learned, okay, in regards to networking, is a lot of big firms see massive value in community-based firms because the relationships you have in the Lehigh Valley and in the Hispanic community, in the neighborhoods, run deep.
Yeah, they do.
And by the way, that $1 million, $5 million case might come in the neighborhood, and it's going through you and you. And so at the end of the day, you might be in a situation, and that case has to get, you know, sent to, you know, referred to somebody. So the value that boutique firms have that have been around a long time with roots in communities, it cannot be, you know, overstated. That, you know, having said that, when you're talking about dealing with an ethnic community, it's no different than being, you know, listen, I'm from East Falls.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know that. You've been to my house. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
In my neighborhood, this is how it rolls. You have Scotts Lane, Indian Queen Lane, Ridge Avenue, and Henry Avenue. If you're a Fallser, a real Fallser, they don't know any. There's the world after those.
That's it,
right? In other words, that's where it is. So,
are you saying you don't get out? Mike?
No, I do.
But
no, I'm not talking about me. But I'm saying a lot of the neighborhood guys they don't know there's a world outside that little boundary. So if somebody gets injured, whoever their buddy is,
okay,
it's real.
Or like the union community. I say that. In a sense, it's important when you're dealing with community based, and I mean this in a trust level, and you know, I have some vendors. Let's just say you sell typewriters. I'm just saying, okay, you'd be better off being that labor leader's brother-in-law than the most knowledgeable typewriter seller on the planet, because there's a trust factor and a comfort factor. In my neighborhood, you could bring Johnny Cochran back, okay, but you know, the guy in the neighborhood whose cousin has they're going with him because by the way, well, it's the same in any other community. In your areas, it's like Enrique, it's based on really life-changing results that you've provided to individuals.
Well, I'm not going to mention names because I know that you get around and you have a lot of relationships with a lot of big
firms. I get around.
But I'm going to say this. I will say this, that the big firms, whatever area, whether it's workers' comp or whether it's immigration or whether it's whatever, that they lose something in terms of the personal touch, in terms of the treatment that folks get, the feeling, the warm and fuzzy feeling that a client has in a personal relationship with an attorney when you have a firm of 30, 40, 50 lawyers, and you have paralegals and assistant to the paralegal and the secretary and the receptionist and all these other people. And then the attorney says, you know, I haven't really seen your file. I don't know this case. That's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
They're going to know your file.
No,
they're going to know you.
That will not happen with me because I do everything myself.
Yeah, well, that's the benefit of you get to talk to the person you know, on the radio right now, with the placard on, and that's a priceless situation when it comes to trust in your area.
Yeah.
And Enrique, so here's some terms that are interesting when we talk about, you know, your commitment and Paula, your commitment to the Hispanic community and everything that you're doing, delving into it. I mean, you know, you've talked to me, we've talked about your commitment and it's impressive. And obviously, you know, your network is, you know, you got yourself an ace there. And having said that, In your world, Enrique, one of the things, you know, you're dealing with immigration issues, and you and I have always talked about, you know, especially for, you know, over the last four years, dating back a year and prior, the American dream was in jeopardy. Okay, you know, having people come to America like a lot of our ancestors came, you know, off and on Ellis Island. My family came, that, you know, that was in jeopardy. But there is hope, but there's so much misnomer going on.
Well,
like, in other words, you're always on top of everything. And you talk, you would think, you know, some of the rules that were put in place, okay, that stop gaps of you know, who could come to, you know, who could, you know, come and, you know, the travel bans, they impacted a lot of people.
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, listen, you know, it's funny how this works, but sometimes, you know, people who are extremely on one end of the political spectrum and people who are on the extreme other end of the political spectrum, actually, we meet somewhere in the middle, you know, over the top. I do believe in a shining city on a hill, you know. I do believe that this is the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
And this is the country that gave my father the opportunity to come here with nothing but the shirt on his back, and he couldn't go to high school because he didn't have any shoes, and I'm an Ivy League attorney. This is the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
And don't make any mistake about it. And it's still happening, and it's not in jeopardy one bit. I see people every day that come into my office. They have nothing. Their children are going to college. Their grandchildren are going to be doctors and lawyers, and they're going to be, you know, people, pillars of this great country, and, you know, credit to the society. So, no, this is still the greatest country in the world.
No, I
agree. And make no mistake.
No, I agree.
You know what I mean? And it's, what makes it that is not just, you know, oh, we're better than everybody. No, it's like you have 50 countries in one country.
Right.
And California alone is bigger than many countries. Texas is bigger than many countries. New York State, bigger than many countries. This is a monster. This is a continent. This is something we never heard of. Russia's a big country, but it's all wasteland. This isn't a wasteland. You know, here, people go to Arkansas, they have work. People go to North Carolina, they have work. People work for Tyson Chicken and, you know, whatever. They work in Montana. You have immigrant communities in places that you would never imagine, in the backwoods of this country, down south, in the Midwest, in the plains, everywhere, because there's opportunity. And people come, and they work, and they make communities. And then they have, you know, their children, and their children do a little better. And then you have somebody, you know, on TV, and next thing you know, you have somebody at the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, Puerto Rican from the Bronx, Supreme Court of the United States, right? You have Colin Powell, Bronx, New York, General of the Armies. Oh, no, this is America, man. I love America.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's the majority of your clients?
I have many, many, many Hispanic clients, predominantly Caribbean, Central American, and
but what are they? What do they? You know,
the utilize area of law, most, yeah. immigration. And, you know, again, we refer people to many types of lawyers. So I'm involved. I'm of counsel with several law firms in the city. So criminal practice, you know, personal injury stuff, medical mal, and all the rest of that stuff wrapped in. Workers' comp now, you know, extending the web with workers' comp with someone who we can deal with, because this is not, you know, the monster workers' comp firms whose names will not be mentioned. I'm just ribbing him because I know he's sensitive. Mm-hmm. But
blushing.
Sorry, no comment. Having said that, yeah. but when you say immigration, what in other words, they're coming. In other words, they want to get.
So people come and they say, "I want to bring my daughter, my son. My son wants to come to the country, and he's in Ecuador or he's in Costa Rica. How does he get a visitor's visa? How does he get a student visa? How does he get a work visa?" Somebody else comes and says, "You know, I've been."
What are the different ways you can get them?
Well, I mean, okay, so if an individual in another country wants to come to the United States, this is not just true for the United States, this is true worldwide.
Yeah.
So you're a citizen by birth of the country in which you were born.
Right.
And then you get a visa, which is permission to enter somebody else's country by going to the embassy or consulate, the diplomatic installation in your country. So you go to the U.S. embassy in, you know, San Jose, Costa Rica, and you show up and you say, you know, I want to be a visitor to the United States. And they're going to say, okay, you want to be a visitor to the United States. You want a visa to a visitor's visa. Okay, how do we know you're going to not just go there and never come back? So then you show up and you say, well, I have a job, and I have property, and I have family, and I have children. I have all these things, durable connections to my country of origin. That means that you can trust me to come back. So just give me this permission to go visit because I have a cousin over there. I have a relative over there. I want to go visit. That's one type of visa.
So there's work visas, there's visitor's visas.
There's immigrant visas, there's non-immigrant visa. Non-immigrant visa, there's many, 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 many types of visas. You can come for visit, for pleasure, or for business. You can come to study. You can come as an investor. You can come as a worker in a company. There's many types of visas, which is not a temporary permission, not a permanent permission, a temporary permission to come for a specific purpose for a defined period of time. So there's all these kinds of visas, which you can apply at any embassy or consulate anywhere in the world, United States, wherever we have diplomatic relations, we have consulates and visa. Consulate being in a city that's not the capital, the embassy being in the capital of whatever city. So you can go to Colombia, Bogota, the embassy, United States embassy. You can apply for a visa there. Any Colombian can walk in and say, I want to apply for a visa. What visa do you want? And depending on the category, you know, and there's a system, and it's worldwide. And if you're in any other country, you can do the same. Now, certain countries we have a treaty with, and they don't need a visa. So the European countries, the Western European countries, any Frenchman, any Spaniard, any Brit can just come here. They don't need a visa because we have a treaty with them. They get 90 days to stay as a visitor, and then they have to leave. When I go to Europe to vacation, I get 90 days as an American citizen to go visit Europe, okay? But it's what they call a visa waiver. So one day we'll have a class on immigration,
yeah,
and I'll explain all these things to you in some more detail.
Yeah.
It's going very fast, you know, but, you know, there is a system. And so it's the idea that all immigrants are illegal or that it's not true. There's a lot of forms of legal immigration. And then there's people who just come in without a visa.
What is the difference between a visa and a green card?
It's the same thing. An immigrant visa is a green card.
Okay.
So that's a permanent visa, as opposed to all the non-immigrant visas. The immigrant visa is the green card. And the green card is just because it used to be green, the color.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things—
And after 5 years having a green card, you can apply for U.S. citizenship.
Is a green card an unlimited?
It's an immigrant visa. They can work, they can leave, they can come back. They can't vote. They're not citizens. They remain citizens of their country of origin. But they're on a path towards citizenship. And what they're trying to do with all these laws is to say, hey, look, we'll give you, you know, deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA, or we'll give you, TPS, temporary protected status. We'll give you something so you can work. But we're not going to give you an avenue to become a citizen. We're going to leave you in a permanent underclass. We're not going to let you get a green card because if you get a green card, in 5 years you can become a citizen.
One of the things that you and I talked about is right now during the pandemic, okay, one of the things that's, I think we had this conversation last time we did a show, where if you go downtown, and I wonder how this impacts your world, Paula, a lot of retail workers, a lot of, not really high paid wage earners, there's jobs available like there's no tomorrow. Now, I don't know what happened after the pandemic unemployment, okay? Everybody said the world was going to change. Everybody's going to be fighting for jobs. Let me tell you something. You get down Center City, and you might wait in a retail line for an hour because there's two people in a place that used to have 20 employees. So I think you and I talked about the fact that there's no process. When it comes to work visas, and we only got 5 minutes left, so we're going to have to continue this. But my point is, there's no process for us to bring low wage earners over here to fill those jobs.
Right. But there's a good reason for that. There is a good reason. There's a logical reason. Our labor laws in this country, and she said it was part of the Department of Labor, the workers' comp, and so forth in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Our labor laws protect qualified American workers. There's a preference for that over any foreigner from any country, visa or no visa. So any employer who wants to employ a foreigner, somebody from another country, that's not a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident, they need to be able to demonstrate to the Department of Labor in that state that company has made efforts to hire qualified American workers, that they're willing to pay a prevailing wage, that's the required wage by the Department of Labor in that state for that kind of work, that the person they're hiring is a person that has the requisite education and experience that they obtained not with that employer, but also. So there's rules to protect the American worker.
I get those rules. By the way, you're talking to a worker, a pro-worker advocate.
That's right.
However, there are businesses out there, too, that are dying right now. And in your world, as much as workers' comp has adapted to representing individuals in the court system, that you guys have done an amazing job. You have to be losing clients, obviously, less workers, less injured workers. Have you felt that at all?
Yes.
I mean, that's got to be you know, a normal, you know, hit.
Yeah, when COVID first hit, you know, we had cases from before. So that kind of carried us through to a certain point. But now things are definitely picking up.
Yeah, I mean, and thank God. I mean, by the way, the mandates in Philly are, I think they just no more ID.
Right.
You know, vaccine ID to get into a restaurant.
Yeah,
we had that problem last time.
Yeah, we had that problem. we got together for lunch, and I, not being from down here, I didn't bring my vaccine card, but I took a photo of it, and I was able to dig through my photos and find it. So
okay.
I got to eat that day.
Well, that's good. You know, but it's not like our restaurants haven't taken enough of a beating. Brett, how much time do we have? We got 1 minute?
What?
Okay, 1 minute. Fastest hour. Fastest debut show in America. Enrique Rosario, contact information at the firm.
Okay, Law Offices of Enrique Rosario, 231 West Girard Avenue, Philadelphia, PA, 19123. Telephone number of the office, 215-291-0707. 215-291-0707. Real quick, if you Google Enrique Rosario, you're going to see me there, you know, right up front on, you know, Yahoo and all the other pages. But there is another Enrique Rosario who is from Allentown, Pennsylvania, who was a criminal, and it's not me. I'm just telling you, okay?
We got the best attorney in America right here, Enrique Rosario, immigration law, not the other guy. Paula, contact information?
Robinson Law, 215-530-7166. www.robinsonlwyr.com.
For work
Thank
injuries
you.
And workers' compensation. Paul, congratulations on an awesome debut show.
Thank you very much.
All right,
pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Paula Robinson and, of course, Enrique Rosario and Brett Cronenberger, thanks for tuning in to Taking Charge with Paul Robinson. I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.